Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. I am your co-host, as always, Paul David.
And I'm your co-host, Maya Doran-Paul Hornby.
We're here today to talk to Guillermo Campoamor, the founder and CEO of Meep. Today, we're going to talk about optimizing urban mobility and with intelligent solutions. And first things first, Guillermo, you run a startup called Meep, which is one of the world's leading mobility as a service startups. We don't know a lot about mobility as a service. We haven't talked about it a lot on Tech Can't Save Us. So yeah, I'll kick it to Maya with the first question about that.
Mm-hmm. So if you could sort of enlighten us and give us an overview of the current challenges and trends in urban mobility, particularly in metropolitan areas, and how these challenges and trend affect everyday commuters, that would be great.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm really happy to be here and share with you our approach to mobility, and I will try to summarize the situation of the industry, the situation in especially in urban areas, mobility, and especially I think the four biggest trends when it comes to mobility. I think we have to start by talking about the challenges in mobility. I think the four main ones I thought about. The first one that I think everyone of us have experienced is traffic congestion. I think our cities nowadays are full of cars. The infrastructure is not keeping up with the growing needs of the city. Everyone that I know is either moving to a big city or working in a big city. So this is a problem. I think. Relates to the first problem, that is traffic, but the second one is infrastructure limitations, and infrastructure not only the physical part, highways, our streets, but also the public transit network limitation. Nowadays, it's very difficult for public transport operators to keep up with the city growth and the city needs. This also leads to environmental concerns, and more our cities are becoming a place with a poor quality air, noise, pollution. So any type of bad scenario when it comes to environmental and sustainability is what we are experiencing in the major cities around the globe. And the fourth one is kind of like putting everything together is the technological integration. This is one of our main challenges, and it's the problem that we are trying to solve. I will tell you more later. And I think these four kind of big problems are now leading to a situation where the four main trends in mobility are, I think they create an acronym for that, either CASE or ACES, that is autonomous vehicles with the A. We can talk a lot of time about this, but the C starts for connected, which is something that we are really focused on in MIP. E for electric, and S, it can be both shared, and I think also sustainable is a key part.
And there's some interesting background too about, you know, like the larger micromobility sector kind of getting its start in the 90s and, you know, with like publicly funded docking systems, and then cities like shifting from being customers to kind of regulators with the introduction of dockless bikes in 2016, 2017. And now we're seeing, you know, obviously a lot of talk about micromobility startups, but a lot of e-scooter companies, e-scooter sharing companies going bankrupt, which is, you know, something that should probably worry a lot of us. I'm a committed Lime bike user myself. That's how I get around London, because frankly, you know, the underground is the underground, and you know, the buses are the buses. But I just find it to be like a quick, easy, but not always cheap way to get around. And so part of the time I'm asking, like, do I really want to pay, you know, Lime £40 every week, you know, for the subscription to use the bikes and things like that? And sometimes the subscription runs out because I run out of minutes because I've used the bikes too much, you know. So I think it's like a really interesting space. And for me as a user in a city, I'm always wondering, oh, is there a better solution for this or a better way for me to travel around my urban area? So some interesting background and context there, I think.
Totally. I think the industry has evolved a lot in the past years, especially after the COVID-19. But it's true that the background, the origins are public versus private, and the private was only the car as an alternative. And that dichotomy creates the whole monopolistic approach of the big transport players that you were saying. And nowadays, I think the micromobility and the first last mile alternative, which kick scooters are, of course, one of them, a very strong one, they are also finding their unit economics and the way to somehow survive in a heavily subsidized and public space, which is tricky because you are coming to the market with a very private approach, venture back in most of the cases in these new mobility alternatives, and you face a direct competition of very public companies and very big with a more like public service approach alternatives, which are very different.
You see it in a couple of ways. I mean, like the Lime and Uber partnership, you know, so here you have a, you know, car sharing, if we can call it that, company that's like, okay, we want to get in the micromobility sector and acquire Lime, you know, and basically connect the dots for, because sometimes I do that. I'll hop on a Lime and then I'm like, okay, I need to like actually go somewhere where it's raining or something. So then hop in an Uber if public transportation is accessible. And then this other piece of like connecting micromobility to sustainability. And a lot of times like you'll jump on a bike and like you save like X amount of CO2 by jumping on the bike, even though the bike was somehow made at some point and probably costs, you know, a certain amount to recharge every day. So that's an interesting piece. But I think this idea of like all tech kind of needs to be climate tech, you know, as we're moving into this world. Like, so what are the sustainability implications for micromobility, which I think is a fascinating space to talk through here.
Just moving on from that, as the founder of Meep, what specific gaps or issues in relation to the four that you just outlined for us in existing urban transport systems did you identify that Meep aims to address? And if you could give some specific case studies, perhaps.
Yeah, of course. So for us, I mean, there are many, many problems that are interconnected, but we tackle the lack of connectivity, that is the technology nowadays in the industry is not the same technology for every player, but of course this is happening in every industry. But the worrisome part of this is that the public operator has maybe like a 20-year-old technology that totally lacks connectivity between different modes. And this is exactly what Paul was saying about the multimodal experience of any citizen of a big city, European city. Maybe there is a different scenario in some other geographies like the US or Latin America. But in Europe, we see that there is a use case for this, where the current commuter can be one day a bicycle rider, the other day a bus a passenger. And this situation creates a problem that is not solved with the current state of the technology. And public transit operators, they require to offer in their own platforms third-party services. So to talk about an example, if you're a commuter in Madrid, maybe you use four times the bus per week. You can use other apps at the same time, but the public bus software is not capable of connecting you to those services. So that's what we are doing best. And for us, that's what it should be, the full digital experience in transit today. And basically through one software, you can connect with different modes.
That's fascinating in relation to what you were just saying about Lime scooters, where even just flattening differences within areas of a city, I imagine, like with Lime scooters, feel like in some boroughs, I think in Islington and Hackney, you've got to park them in very specific zones, whereas in other boroughs, you can leave them wherever you want in the street, which is crazy to me.
This happened to me. Like I was leaving my barbershop in Deptford, and I took a Lime scooter, and I was trying to get over to Greenwich to meet some friends for a show, and I literally like was on the bike, and all of a sudden it was like, you're in a no-go area. Like, not only can you not cycle anymore, you have to go back to the previous area and park the bike. And I was just like, okay.
And so you're going to look like an idiot because they're going to make you go 5 miles per hour.
100%, yeah. And so I literally had to like drag this bike that has now been rendered inoperable by Lime to like the area I can park it in, and then I had to park it, and then I had to call, you know, an Uber, called a Bolt in this case, and then get the rest of the way to my destination. I was a little bit late, not terribly, but it's just like the interoperability and the lack of interconnectivity between the options, I think, is a huge problem. So it's exciting to see, you know, Meep and other digital solutions trying to deal with that.
Yeah, and the lack of communication to users until they are actually on the device.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think obviously I wasn't using the Lime app to map my route. I was using Google Maps. I sure wish Google Maps told me. And they actually have, like, you can look up where Limes are on Google Maps, but for whatever reason, they haven't integrated enough to be like, hey, Paul, you can only take this bike as far as Greenwich and you have to get off. Like, I wish that would have been helpful, you know? So which leads us to our next question, Guillermo, which is, you know, understanding how Meep, and I realize it's a rising product, integrates with existing urban transportation networks and kind of benefits, you know, it offers to users and cities. And if you could, like, highlight some of the unique features that set Meep apart from other urban mobility solutions and yeah, any successful projects you've been working on as well. Big question.
So yeah, exactly. It was the case that you were mentioning, that the user experience, this is what we are referring to when we are talking about user experience, is that you have a use case when you are riding a kick scooter that is totally different from when you are riding the bus or getting a ride hailing vehicle. But this is something that nowadays in the industry, in a more like theoretical way, the big cities and the big transport operators, they are totally aware of. But it's funny how the end user that is suffering all these challenges and these pain points is the one that is totally on board with the idea of having something fully integrated. So what we do is basically a software solution that integrates everything seamlessly. When I'm talking about everything, I'm talking from a kick scooter to the public bus to a taxi to even touristic attractions. This could seem like a crazy idea from the future, but we are actually actively operating more than 20 cities nowadays in 8 different countries. It's true that in the big metropolitan areas like London or Paris, normally they have their own solution, but we work with a B2B approach. So we provide our backend and our white label apps to big transport players in the industry in Europe, the US and Latin America. And this is exactly what we try to achieve, a Google Maps version that goes one step further, that is the booking and the payment integration. This is something that Google Maps lacks, because it's so big and it's everywhere. So they don't have the ability or the resources to go to the detail, to the local transport needs, which is basically our everyday transportation needs as commuters, is something that is very local, even though the commuting patterns in London could be similar to the ones in Madrid or Berlin. you will still need to talk with the authority to Transport for London, in the case of London, in Madrid, to the big agency that has more like a regulatory approach. And regarding the features that you mentioned, well, we have a journey planner for the people that don't know how to get from A to B, or the people that they don't know what is the availability of different vehicles or different options in real time, which is very useful. We also have the visualization on the map of the different markers, transportation services to move around the city in a more, let's say, efficient way. And we have a user management system, or we also centralize all the payments. So you don't need to have a payment account in Lime, another payment account in Bolt, another payment account in Citibike, for example. Everything will go from a single user account and a single payment method.
Obviously, this podcast is interested in sort of assessing the risks of using technology in industry. And so I was just wondering about how Meep sort of addresses perhaps when you're making this sort of sustainable connected mobility ecosystem, which is based on all these digital transports, what about modes of transport which perhaps don't have that sort of digital infrastructure? So what comes to mind for me is like tuk-tuks, or more sort of cash in hand ones which you don't have an app to go click on. How do you sort of mitigate not sort of supporting those?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. We always say that you need, first of all, infrastructure and physical options. And on top of that, of course, you can deploy a digital layer that will enable a more efficient access or a more equitable access. But in the case of informal transportation like tuk-tuks or some non-regulated mobility in Latin America, it comes to mind the vans in Mexico City, for example. What we try to help the owners of that mobility infrastructure, nowadays it's kind of easy if you have a mobile device, but you have to also have data. So the lack of connectivity most of the times creates a very big barrier in this informal transportation. But in the case that you can have both connectivity and the mobile device, a cell phone, is enough to be able to connect those business owners, because in most of the cases are single business owners that they want to have their own vehicle to move people around, to connect to bigger networks. So at the end of the day, for us and our service is targeted to big transport operators. We believe that the most efficient way to move around in a big city is through public transit. It's true that sometimes it's not the fastest, but we believe that if small players like tuk-tuk drivers or vans, in the case of Latin America, are connected to the last mobility hubs of the public transit infrastructure, it will be much beneficial for the whole community. This is tricky, but I think there are some cases like the case of Bogota, or the case of, I think nowadays, Mexico City is trying to push this with the BRT concept, that basically you have a fast, single, dedicated lane of public transit with a very heavy infrastructure capacity. That means that it moves a lot of people, a lot of commuters. And at the end of that line, you have smaller lines that could be informal or formal, on-demand or more flexible, smaller capacity operators. And that creates a much efficient and faster a dynamic transport ecosystem. But it's true what you're saying, that we always are asking a lot about the technology part of the mobility, but you have to invest in infrastructure, vehicles, and on top of that, the digital layer.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what's one thing that's so interesting about mobility as a service, and unlike maybe other digital solutions, like it relies on that real world brick and mortar infrastructure, to have that happen. So I think we're seeing that a bit with like, okay, we got to put the Lime bike somewhere, and we need to kind of like organize it, you know, effectively, so that people aren't stepping over them, and God knows where, the sidewalk somewhere, or you know, how is it connecting to public transport, so people can, you know, have different parts of their journey connect up in a way that feels seamless. Would love to pivot a little bit and talk about your growth strategy for me, because it strikes me that like, okay, the need is there, the demand is there. There's lots of cities and transportation authorities and people, humans, that could benefit from what you're offering with Meep. So reaching scale, you know, it seems like an important priority for you all. So let me understand the approaches that you're taking to expand, you know, Meep's user base and presence in new markets. Obviously, you're starting, you know, you brought it to a good place. You got, you know, over 50 employees. You just raised a Series A. Congratulations on that, by the way. Not easy to do in today's funding environment. What are like the key strategies and partnerships and technological advancements that you've leveraged to grow Meep and to get it to the point you've gotten? And where do you see it going in the future, your growth strategy?
This is a good question. Since we are a B2B software, sometimes our approach to the idea is maybe too technical. It's true that when you get to the daily use cases, everyone has felt that these pain points when we are moving around in a city. You don't need to go to Mexico City to feel the traffic, to be stuck in traffic and so on. But for us, our best growth strategy has been, and I think it is, content. The content creation, even though it sounds kind of like a cliche, I think the industry, they have so many problems. I mentioned in the first question, four of them that I think we can easily think about 10 more. And I think we've seen the need, even in the technical, in the decision makers at the high level, the need of more technical explanation, more context in terms of what is mobility service, for what is the best use cases. It doesn't require to think mobility as a service as this utopia deployment where everything is connected and you have like a personal assistant in your phone that tells you and guides you every step of the way in a multimodal trip. Sometimes it is a easier approach. And we have done a lot of in that sense. For example, we have created many white papers, infographic, interviews like this one, I think helps, they help a lot the community to know more about what is there. Because when you talk with like average commuters that are not in the industry, they think that is not possible. No? If it is not in Google Maps or in Waze, cannot be done. And that's not true. You know, the technology is there. I think there are much more difficult technological innovations that we are using in our daily lives. But it's true that mobility as a service has to be promoted from the municipality and from the public perspective, from the public operator side. And many of our competitors that they have tried to launch a very good mobility as a service solutions, they approach it from a B2C perspective, and I think that's one of the mistakes, because in a B2C competition you have Google Maps, you have Waze, and it's going to be very, very difficult to compete with them, even if you have everything fully integrated.
Yeah. Would love to. I'm glad you mentioned user experience earlier as well, because that's something we care about so much. It's so important to like immerse yourself in like what is the actual feeling that a user gets from engaging with my app, engaging with my marketing strategy or whatever it is. So I'm really glad you mentioned that. Would love to understand a bit more about Meep's buyers. Like, who are the ones that are actually buying your service, you know, whether it's an individual, whether it's a, you know, government or transportation authority, and what have you learned about them and their wants and desires and things that they're looking for solutions over the past years, and how has that made its way into your growth strategy?
Well, this is another good question. It's tricky to, because we have like so many types of different clients, but most of them public bus operators, public agencies, or big bus operators, like private long distance bus operators. And we've seen that most of their IT or innovations departments are very well educated about the trends in the industry, but they all share a similar view of the digital products in general. I think our views are really contaminated by the different use cases that we have as final users and consumers. You know, all of us are users in some subscription-based streaming service, for example, or we use e-commerce platforms, marketplaces. We'll try to replicate that experiences, that digital experiences, to other industries, which could be or could be not so suitable. For example, nowadays there's a big trend with the ChatGPT, for example, and now everyone thinks that you can replicate chat user experience to anything. And I think that's tricky.
What's an example of that for you? Like, are you, you know, going into conversations with people who run bus networks in cities, and they're like, wow, why doesn't Meep work like Netflix? Or like, what are you running into specifically, like, that they're sort of stuck on, that's like making, you know, you growing Meep difficult, I guess?
Well, for example, the purchase experience. You know, I think you can divide the transport experience in three big steps. One is the planning part, could be multimodal or a single mode. The small part right after the planning is the booking, and this only applies to those modes that you need to pre-book your seat. Normally is a long distance trip, where you have to have availability for a specific time and date. And the validation and payment part, I think, is the trickiest part, because in some transport mode, you do a prepayment, example, the bus, you have a fare, you pay your ticket. And other ones, like the one that you mentioned online, you either have a wallet with a certain amount of minutes, a weekly pass, or a post-payment scenario, that is the taxi example. So those three user journeys are key to understand and connect the experience. And if you are a commuter that is jumping from a prepayment to a post-payment mode, it's tricky to combine those modes. And if you are, like, for example, projecting that towards, let's say, Amazon, that I think is the smoothest and the seamless purchase experience in the digital world, it's almost impossible, because you cannot, like, say, like, okay, whatever. You authorize the payment and you don't inform the commuter on how much it's going to be at the end of the trip. So it's going to be a lot of crashing and shocks along the user experience point that is impossible to replicate or to kind of transform into Amazon experience. And it happens to us that you encounter potential clients, they want to have like a payment method like Amazon Pay, or they have a single sign-on like Google, and it's very tricky. I think transport-wise and the mobility ecosystem will require to make some steps before other industries like marketing, entertainment, or music. You know, you cannot compare Spotify user experience to mobility. It's true that could be better experience, the mobility one, but you still need to combine very different use cases.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like oversimplification in tech of like, make this the Uber of that, or like the Netflix of this industry. And it's like, it's not quite like, we're comparing, you know, apples and oranges a bit, and like the user journeys are very different. And I love how you've kind of, you know, sketched out like, these are the user journeys in transport. You've got, you plan your journey, you book your journey, and then you, you know, there's the validation and payment piece. And then obviously you take your journey. There's that whole piece. I think that's really interesting. And to think about the content side of things too, like, when you're manager of a large transportation network in a city, how do you help people along with those user journeys, and how do potential digital products to help you with that, like me, you know, assist you in making those user journeys better, faster, more secure, what have you? So I think the way you framed it was really good. And how do you then give content to that person so that they feel comfortable with your digital product? That's a very interesting growth strategy challenge. So thanks for outlining that.
User journeys, urban journeys.
Yeah.
It's all very,
yeah,
very meta. I'd love to know the story behind the name Meep.
Yeah, it's a good one. As you know, people in Spain, not in other Spanish-speaking countries, but in Spain, because I know that Latin America, they have more exposure to English because of the US. But we translate everything, we dub everything. So the Roadrunner in Spain, instead of beep with B, is with M, is Meep. So the sound was kind of catchy in the early days, and we were struggling finding the trademark and everything. So it's due to the Roadrunner, the cartoon.
Yeah, I think it's Meep Meep in the US too, right? I think it might.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought it was with B, but... but if you talk to any Spaniard, they will immediately make the sound of the bird.
Yeah, that's a cool. And will you be integrating some Roadrunner? Oh, I guess that's a trademark, so you can't integrate Roadrunner. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I don't think we can mess with the Looney Tunes.
Yeah, probably not. I'm sure there's trademarks out the wazoo for that one. So yeah, but that's cool though. I mean, it's a memorable name, and it has some connection to transport. Obviously, people think beeps transport, I guess, to some extent, and Roadrunner is fast and arguably got where they were going whenever they needed to, as quickly as they could, running away from the, what was it? Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. Yeah, Coyote. Yeah, so fair.
Yeah, it's almost so good a name. It feels like it came before the idea for the company. But I imagine the idea came first. I'd love to hear about what inspired you to start Meep. And just like, how has your personal experience and professional background shaped the company's missions and values?
So, well, my background is totally different from our mobility. My background is law and economics. I think I graduated in a crisis period. I think most of our generation, we have like catch one crisis after another, but mine was the subprime one. So I decided to keep studying, and I was in a master's degree about international commerce. My hobby has been, and still is, the wine. I'm really a wine aficionado, and I really like any type of wine, and I study the grapes, so kind of like a little bit obsessive about it. I decided to pursue my passion, and I joined a big winery holding in Spain, and I was an export manager for almost 3 years. And I was in charge of 20 different countries, from the Nordics up to Japan. So my daily routine was basically being on an airplane. I was, I think I had all the frequent flyer status in every single airline that was covering my geographies. And I had the experience at the same time. I had the experience, the wine world is, a very unique business setting, but I had the opportunity to be in almost any country and a major city in those places. And I realized how important traffic and transport networks are. And you can have cities like Bangkok with the same population as Hong Kong or Singapore with a much worse transport system. And it was for me a massive headache to have like 3 days in Bangkok, to have to reschedule meetings, think about what is the transport alternative to get to that that meeting or to that tasting. And that was the origin of the idea. I called one of my best friends that he was, we shared a previous life in Brazil. We were in the university. I convinced him to jump into this adventure 7 years ago. And that was the origin. And I think when you arrive to any city that they have a think about the transport experience and the commuting experience, you have a much better experience. It doesn't matter that if you are there for business or if you're there as a tourist, it changes everything. You know, you you can have amazing cities like Rome. I'm sorry for the people that are listening the podcast that are from Rome. It's a wonderful city with a horrible transport experience.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because like, I'm always shocked by like when I land in a new place, like in an airport, in a new city, or even when I come out of the underground or the, you know, the subway, and I'm like, why am I so disoriented? Like, why do I not instantly know or have information as part of my pre-planning about where to go when I land in some of these places? And it's like shocking to me that in 2024, with all the tools that we have, you know, that like we're often so disoriented during our mobility journeys, and like, why have we not solved for that? And it's really cool that you're starting to solve for that and thinking holistically about how do we make sure that people aren't disoriented, that they have great options, that they have, you know, affordable, easy to understand ways to sort of pay for things and to take all those steps in the user journey, from planning to booking to validation, ticketing. What you're doing makes a lot of sense in that it's like a very tangible problem to solve in the daily, you know, journeys of humans. So appreciate what you're doing, Guillermo. And yeah, and we're big fans of what you're doing at Meep.
Yeah, we normally, I think we blame the culture, because it's true. If you go to Southeast Asia and you're from Europe, it could seem like a far culture. But that is not true, because if you land in Singapore, you will immediately land in an amazing airport. But I think it will be like a couple of minutes for you to know how to get around. You will immediately have a payment method that it will be seamless, digital. So I don't think it's about the culture. It's the approach of the city officials towards the transportation experience.
Yeah, and also recognizing that transport experiences and accessibility requirements are different. Mm-hmm. And I imagine Meep empowers users who have, yeah, different accessibility requirements to feel like they can travel or plan their journey safely and that they will get to A to B just like somebody else.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we're trying to incorporate more and more like unique use cases that are part of the experience. Like we have our apps are ADA compliant. That in the US is a big thing for all the people that they have special needs to be guided and have the best experience. We were trying to work with the official of Paris for the Olympics for some infrastructure needs. That is also a tricky sphere, because the infrastructure is something that also we need to figure out. And I mean, I'm not talking about MIP, I think we all are. And I think we have to demand city officials and our city representatives to invest in infrastructure for everyone. You know, sometimes we have gender problems in the infrastructure, and that goes beyond people with special needs that sometimes they don't even attend the basic infrastructure problems when it comes to wheelchairs, wheelchairs for babies. So there are like many situations that we can help from the digital part, but we still, as we were saying before, we still physical infrastructure.
Yeah, I understand in Mexico City, they have women-only cars on the metro, and that, like, because the metro has just not been made safe for women. You know, it's like, it's horrendous. My partner, she wouldn't even ride the metro when she was there. And, you know, it's like, we need to solve these, like, very human, real-time, you know, safety and infrastructure issues, and then, you know, add on the digital layer. So there's, appreciate you as a digital, you know, leader and a startup saying, hey, there's limits to this, you know. And I think sometimes in startup world, we think that, you know, tech is going to save everything and fix everything. And sometimes it can't, you know, but how's the digital layer work with the sort of infrastructure layer to make sure that we do have good options for folks? So
yeah, and also like identify problems in the sort of physical layer and really sort of amplify the need to sort of think up non-tech related solutions.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a woman landing in Mexico City, like that would be good information to know, wouldn't it? Like that, hey, like the metro has problems with, you know, like safety for women, and there are women only cars, and how do I navigate you towards one of those, or give you alternatives and stuff like that. Like having that would be incredible for women visiting Mexico City. Guillermo, thank you so much. This has been a fantastic conversation. I think what you're doing at MEEP is super cool, and just like keep pushing, keep going. You've already done amazing work building, you know, as a founder to founder, a company to 50 people, and you just raised a really lovely Series A. So keep on keeping on. And yeah, just thank you for joining us today to talk about optimizing urban transportation with mobility as a service. So thank you.
Yeah, again. Good luck with Paris.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. We will keep fighting the fight.
Yeah. Let's stay in touch. Real quick, where can folks find out more about MEEP out there in the world on the interwebs?
So yeah, you can follow us in LinkedIn. It's MEEP.AAPP, like app. We are all over the place, and we're trying to keep informing about the best practices in mobility.
Sweet. We'll drop that. It's meep.app and meep.app, and we'll drop that in the episode description, and have folks check you out on, I think you're on X as well, and LinkedIn, and have folks give you a follow there.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for joining us. And also for our listeners, please you know, share, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating so we can have more great guests like Guillermo Campoamor, who's the CEO of Meep, on the pod. Thanks again for joining us, Guillermo.
Thank you.